My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's my music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I am your host, Andrew Rich, and I am joined today by a returning guest. He is a VOW contributor. It's Jeremy Sexton. Hello again, Jeremy.
Hello, hello. It's great to be back.
Yeah. It is your third time on the show here. And as we all know, Jeremy, triples mixed safe. Triples is best.
It's best, yes.
Yes. I mean, you have a wife. She's good, right? You know,
I have a wife, right?
tell the kit. Sorry,
you know her. You met her.
I have met her. Yeah, but since the last time you were on, you've actually moved to Las Vegas.
I have. I'm out here in Vegas, just baking in the sun, still in September, and loving that I'm not going to have to shovel my driveway in a couple months. So.
That is pretty nice, yes. And it tickles me that a man of God like yourself has moved to such a hotbed of sin there, Jeremy.
Well, hey, I mean, Jesus hung out with, you know, tax collectors and prostitutes. And so where better than I've already hung out with the tax collectors when I lived in D.C. And so now it's time to come hang out with the prostitutes. So,
yeah. What happens when a man of God moves to Las Vegas? Be sinner's luck coming this fall to NBC. I've never been to Vegas. I have a good friend who's gone a bunch of times over the years, and he's not really a gambler. He's more like the entertainment side of things, the resort side of things. And he always says, don't go more than a week. Go like 4 or 5 days tops. After that, it just comes kind of a little too much, I guess. And I believe that because Vegas does seem like a lot. Has it seemed like a lot to you so far, Jeremy?
Well, so the local experience and the come to Vegas experience are two totally different experiences.
Right.
Like when we were here for, we did a winter here, January and February, before we decided to make the move. And it's just like real laid back, real chill. Like Vegas locals are pretty cool for the most part. It's not a lot of like, I don't know, a lot of like angry energy in the city. Everybody's just kind of like, yeah, whatever. And so it's nice. And so for us, like we're still young here in Vegas, and people keep telling us like, oh, you'll get bored of going to the strip and stuff. But for us, like we're huge foodies and things like that. So for, you know, we have like it's like a 15, 20 minute Uber trip to the strip from our house. And so we can like go get dinner somewhere, go see a show. We just saw Tom Segura on Saturday, went to the show, went to dinner, came home. And that's like, you can do enough Vegas and then just come back to your house. That's pretty great.
Yeah. And you also, I read recently, you have tickets to the Sphere, right?
I do. This Saturday, we are going to Riyadh Season Noche UFC, whatever the name of this thing is. This is another nice thing about living in Vegas, is that you can wait for ticket prices to drop because you don't have to book travel. And so the initial Sphere tickets were like $3,000 a piece. And that wasn't exactly in the budget. So we were like, well, we'll wait. We'll wait it out. And they got below $800 last week. And then it became real, like, ooh, we could make this happen. It's a really special show. And so we are going Saturday, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like just an amazing place to see a concert or a show in general. I mean, there's been U2 there. There's been Fish there. I know... Eagles are going to be there pretty soon for like a weekend residency kind of thing. So, although I know you get migraines, are you going to be okay in that venue with those giant screens everywhere? So,
yeah, it's interesting. The noise usually is worse than the sound at places like that. So I've got a pair of the Loop earbuds, like the noise can earplugs that are fantastic, and so those are just in my pocket at all times now, basically. And so I'll definitely have those in. I'll have my sunglasses on me just in case. I'll probably pay for it the next day. That also happens where I can get up for like a big event. And then the next day it's like, oh, you used way too much energy in the tank for that. And so we'll see how Sunday morning goes. It's probably not going to be super fun, but Saturday night looks like it's going to be incredible.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well, speaking of fun, let's get to today's episode here. Today's episode is called Card Subject to Change. And that is a phrase that many wrestling fans are used to nowadays. We see it on show posters and show lineups all the time. It basically means that there's a chance that a promoted wrestler may not show up, or a match may get changed or canceled because of an injury, some sort of emergency or travel issue. And in our case here on the show, that means we are playing songs where the person singing the lead vocals on the song is not the band's typical lead singer, or co-lead singers in some cases. The proverbial card has been changed, and someone else has taken their place. Either it's someone else in the band who does not normally sing lead, maybe they do sometimes but not always, or never sings lead, or it's an outside guest who is brought in for this one song or what have you. So it makes for a fun topic, especially when a bunch of the songs that we picked here today, Jeremy, are actually really big hits.
Yeah. It was surprising to me as I was putting my list together, like how many of these songs like I legitimately love. Like these aren't just, it wasn't just, oh, let me cobble together a list of songs that qualify. It was like, oh, no, I actually really love all of these songs. So. It's an exciting, and you know, we had a little peek behind the curtain. We had a brief discussion about the Cars coming into this because they technically have one lead singer, but literally every single one of their hits was sung by the bassist. So,
We talked about this in the episode with Mora. Rick Ocasek is the main frontman of the Cars. He sings a lot of their big hits. But Ben Orr was really a co-lead singer. He sings on like 3 or 4 songs per album, and a lot of those songs are also hits. So we made some decision making, and your original pick, Drive, was cast aside there and replaced. But it's all okay because there are plenty of great songs we'll get to on today's episode. And you know, I was thinking too about this topic. You do kind of wonder what if. And a lot of these scenarios, you know, what if the actual lead singer sang it instead of this other person? And that's true for wrestling too. I mean, so many times in wrestling, there's been cases where the original plans fell through or the original match fell through and something else has happened and it spins off wrestling history into a whole new timeline. The one that I always think of is 2019, when originally it was supposed to be Bryan Danielson versus Mustafa Ali at WrestleMania 35. And then Ali gets injured, leading out to Elimination Chamber, and then Kofi Kingston takes his place, and then that leads to Kofi Mania, where Kofi gets the big title shot at Mania, and he gets the big title win. And I think ultimately that did end up working better in terms of like the atmosphere or whatever, but you do wonder like what would have happened if Ali had not gotten injured and Ali was the one who was, you know, facing Brian. Or what if, you know, CM Punk didn't do that stage dive and break his foot a couple years ago? Or what if we did get that Demon Balor versus Sister Abigail match? You know, what could have been, Jeremy? What could have been?
Well, and even like on a much smaller scale, I'm thinking about a year ago or so. Yeah, it was about a year ago where CM Punk is fired and in comes Bryan Danielson in a strap match with Ricky Starks at All Out.
Yes.
You know, a show I went to. And so sort of what would have happened if it would have been Punk in that match against Starks like it was supposed to be? Would we have gotten it? Still probably would have been real good, but would it have been the insane classic that we ended up getting? Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? It's again, it's the eternal question. Yeah. But let's get to the music here. We both have 10 songs, and I have brought a playout song as well. Jeremy, start us off here. What is your first pick?
All right, so my first pick, it was always going to be from this band by this singer, but there were two songs I was really trying to nail it down between. The band is the Beatles. The singer, of course, is George Harrison. And the song that I ended up going with just barely nudged out something. And that song is While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Look at the floor and I see. This song is just an absolute classic that George and Eric Clapton basically made by brute force against the against the rest of the band's wishes. They came in, they were like, no, we've got this song. We're going to make this song. They forced them to make this song. And it is absolutely incredible. Everything about this, just the guitar solos that run through it, just like the chord progressions, the whole thing, like, it's just a mood. It's a vibe. Slow Hands just go into town in the background. This is just awesome. It's incredible.
It's a great song. It's a classic. Yeah. And I looked it up. George has 22 Beatles songs that he sings and wrote. Ringo even less, of course. And within that, he has some of the best Beatles songs. You know, it's this, Here yeah. Comes the Sun, Something, I Me Mine, Taxman. I'm not a huge fan of Within You, Without You. We'll put that to the side. But besides that, I mean, he's got some classics, no doubt about it. And people thought, oh, he's the quiet Beatle or whatever. He had stuff to say. He just, you know, needed John and Paul to get out of the way for him to say it. So, yeah, just a great pick for sure.
And without, you know, this song, we don't get the performance of this song at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
One of the greatest things that's ever happened. I mean, like, it turns anyone that's seen it into Charlie Murphy, like trying to explain what Prince did, like, and then he threw his guitar into the air. I don't know where it went. It still has never come down. Like, if you haven't seen the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, While My Guitar Gently Weeps with Tom Petty and George's son and Prince and like everybody
Jeff
else
Lynn,
on the planet.
Steve Winwood.
Yeah, like just guitar legends. And then Prince goes out there. And my wife is someone who does not like guitar solos. Like, they just do nothing for her. And I was like, no, but you have to see this one. And I played it for her. And she was like, all right, yeah, that was pretty cool. Like, it's just, it's so unreal what Prince does. I don't want to make this whole thing about Prince, but, you know, this song was the canvas that he like took to an even higher level, which he could do because it's an incredible song.
Well, my first pick was also recorded at Abbey Road. Pink Floyd was making their album Wish You Were Here, and they had this song, and Roger Waters' voice was too stressed to sing it. David Gilmour wouldn't sing it. At the same time, this guy named Roy Harper was also recording there, and he was their friend, so he stepped in and he sang the song. This is Have a Cigar. By the way, which one's pink? The famous line. Yeah, Roy Harper. He is a folk artist, very influential on bands of the day. If you know the Led Zeppelin song, Hats Off to Roy Harper, that's him. They named it after him. So, one of my favorite Pink Floyd songs, despite the fact that no one in Pink Floyd actually sings it. And I know Roger Waters actually later regretted not singing it, but to me it sounds, you know, just as good, whether it was Roger or David or whomever. So, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, this is great. This got a lot of run in the Sexton House. Like, I didn't recognize the name of the song right away, but then as soon as that bow, bow, bow hit, I was like, oh, yeah, this song. Like, yeah, this song's great. It kind of, like, it just, the vocals are just sort of that, like, you know, generic classic rock vocal guy that this really could have been anybody. But like the guy that's, it's great. Like, and so I can understand why they might be thinking like, man, we should have done this one ourselves. But the song, it slaps. It's a great Pink Floyd classic.
And there are only two other Pink Floyd songs sung by a non-member. Great Gig in the Sky off of Dark Side. And a song that they put out 2 years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine called Hey, Hey, Rise Up. They had this Ukrainian singer come in and sing the song there. So, not too often you'll find a Pink Floyd song that Roger or David or Sid aren't singing. I know Richard sings a couple. Nick does the spoken word on one of these days. But anyway, Jeremy, what's your next pick for us?
All right, so my next pick, it was a little bit of a controversial song at the time that it was released, but this has been called by one of the members of the previous group, the Beatles. One of them called this his favorite song and the greatest song ever written, and it has been called by music, review legend, critic extraordinaire John Stamos, a perfect song, and I'm inclined to agree. It's God Only Knows by the Beach Boys.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. You should ever leave me, though life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
Bono, when asked about Brian Wilson, he said, "I know that Brian believes in angels. I do too, but you only have to listen to the string arrangement on God Only Knows for fact and proof of angels." This song is an absolute masterpiece. Somehow it manages to hit every emotion, like all at the same time, in ways that are hard to vocalize. Like, it's syrupy sweet, but yet it's also kind of like heartbreaking at the same time. Like, it also makes you want to cry. This, I believe this was used to great effect in the game Bioshock Infinite, where they have a barbershop quartet sing it, and it's supremely creepy because this song is somehow like all of those things all at the same time. It is Paul McCartney who called this his favorite song, said it's the greatest song ever written. It's just so great. Carl apparently had not done much singing. This is a Carl Wilson lead vocal. I think I had seen someone had counted up on Reddit that he had done lead vocals until this song on only like three tracks. And then it was after that that I believe he started doing a little bit more. But they were working on it, and they were like, "Ah, it's something's not right." And they were like, "Why don't we have Carl sing it?" And then Carl sings it, and this thing, it's incredible. I don't know what else to say.
Yes, I agree with Uncle Jesse and his fine summation of this song. Yeah, I was confused at first when you picked this, because I thought, well, it's the Beach Boys. Don't they all sing?
Yep.
And then I realized, oh, this was the first big song that Carl sang lead on, and everything else before that was mostly Brian or Mike on yep. lead. And then after Pet Sounds comes out, as Brian gets more, you know, burdened by personal issues, Carl steps in to become the de facto leader of the band, and he sings lead on a lot more songs after this. So, yeah, this is kind of a song that you may not realize would fit on this kind of episode, but it's a pretty good pick and just a great song in general, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like a transition piece in Beach Boys lore of, you know, there's kind of a pre and post God Only Knows for them, and some may say for all of music.
Did you watch the Beach Boys documentary that came out recently?
No, I haven't yet.
It's really good. It does skip over a lot of stuff, though. It mainly focuses on the start of the band and like the 60s stuff. So it's not like a complete comprehensive history. It's like a little under 2 hours, and you can't okay. get 65 years of a band in under yeah. 2 hours. But it's graded for what it is, I think. If it okay. was like a multi-part series, like a four-hour thing or whatever, I'm sure it would have delved a lot deeper. But there's a lot of – they do have a good amount of stuff in there regardless. So
nice.
Yeah. Okay, my next pick is a little band called Queen. And we all know Freddie Mercury is the front man through and through. But on every Queen album, there are one or two songs where Brian May, the guitarist, sings it, or Roger Taylor, the drummer, sings it. And this is a Roger song. It's off of A Night at the Opera, and it's actually the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody, which I have a story about that in a little bit. But this is a quirky and delightful little song called I'm in Love with My Car.
Hand
So I genuinely enjoy that song, despite it being pretty goofy. There's a line, "Told my girl I'll have to forget her, rather buy me a new carburetor." So it's very goofy, but it's an earnest love song as well. And I love Roger's vocals. He's got that raspy voice, but he could sing falsetto as well. Like, you can hear him do falsetto on those first Queen albums, and he sounds amazing. But, you know, in the same band as Freddie Mercury, it's hard to take center stage. But yeah. Every so often, you know, Brian or Roger would have a song on the album, and they would be pretty good, too. I mean, all four members of the band could write songs, and they all wrote hit songs, too. So, you know, just so much talent in that band beyond, obviously, Freddie's. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can't really sing about cars now like you could in 1975, right? Like, no one's singing that about, you know, like a Prius or something. Like, you know, back then, cars were cars, and you could write really, really sincere love songs about them, and it would not be weird at all. Yeah, this song's great, and it you're right. Like, it is so, like, sincere and earnest. And it is so ridiculous at the same time, but it's just one of the things that makes Queen, like, one of the best bands to drive around to. You know, like, Baby Driver worked Brighton Rock into the soundtrack, and, like, you know, that's good for speeding around. This is good for just, like, cruising and just, like, feeling the road. And yeah, this song slaps.
Yeah, and the story goes, Roger loved this song so much, he locked himself in a tape closet and he wouldn't come out until they agreed that the song would be the B-side to Bohemian Rhapsody. And I think part of the motivation, of course, is the royalties, because yes. If you can get a hit single, you get the royalties from it. But I do love the idea of Roger Taylor, one of rock's greatest drummers, hiding in a cupboard and being like, no, it's the B-side. I'm not coming out until it's the B-side. You know, it's one of those, you know, stories that maybe is a little mythologized, but it's very amusing regardless. So, yeah.
That's really funny.
All right. What's next for you, Jeremy?
Well, we have a beautiful transition that I don't think we planned at all here, but from one B-side to another, this was a song where rather than the artist demanding that it be a B-side, the producers stepped in and were like, this is too good to be a B-side. You should save it for a record. To which the singer and writer of this song responded, and I quote, pardon my French, "Well, I don't write shit songs." He has since said that he regrets the decision. Mm-hmm. You've probably never heard this song as a result. It is the song The Master Plan by the band Oasis.
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves. Sail them home with acquiesce on a ship of hope today. And as they land upon the shore, tell them not to fear no more. Sing it loud and sing it proud today. And then dance if you wanna dance. Please, brother, take a chance. You know they gotta go which way they wanna go.
This is definitely one of Oasis's most complex tunes. This is pure Noel Gallagher through and through. This was the B-side for the song Wonderwall. And so it came out in 95 as a B-side. It wouldn't be released on an album until way later when they released an album of B-sides called The Master Plan, of which this was obviously the title track. I love this. It's definitely the most music of any Oasis song. Like, the orchestra just puts it way over the top. For me, like, I love mixing in an orchestra in a rock band, or like an orchestra in hip-hop. I just went a couple weekends ago to the Wynn and got to see the 30th anniversary of Illmatic, which, pardon me while I turn to dust over here, but it was the 30th anniversary of Illmatic. It was Nas and the Las Vegas Philharmonic played together. And so it's like an orchestra playing the beats to that song. And it was just, it could not have been more like my jam. You combine an orchestra with like a band and of pop music, and I'm there. What's really funny about this one, though, there's a real Born in the USA situation going on where, like, it's called The Master Plan, and you hear, like, it belts out, like, we're all part of a master plan. And the song is about how there's not actually a master plan. and so, like, people have gotten it completely wrong. But this is total like Apex Oasis, where when people ask Noel about what this song is about, he will tell you it's his greatest achievement as a songwriter, but he doesn't even really know like what it means or anything like that. But it rocks, and I love this.
Yeah, Noel has a really good voice. He sings on a chunk of songs on the albums as, you know, as time goes on with the band. Don't Look Back in Anger was a huge hit, and that's classic. Him singing on it. But mostly it's, you know, a lot of B-sides, a lot of non-album songs where he sings lead, including this one, of course. And yeah, Noel is on record regretting having this be a B-side and not holding it back for the album. And I agree, it's a beautiful song. And I think if you put this on What's the Story of Morning Glory, which is already a legendary album, I think you put that on the same listing as Wonderwall and Champagne Supernova and Some Might Say and all those songs, it would have made that album, I think, even more incredible. But yeah, look, again, it's the what if factor of it all. What if this was on the album and not just on the compilation album? So yeah, but okay. Up next, I have a weird song by New Order. This is from their 2015 album, Music Complete. And this one, Bernard Sumner wrote this poem, and they put it to music. But instead of having Bernard sing it, they got this guy named Iggy Pop to recite it. And if you ever wanted to hear Iggy Pop recite poetry, here you go. This song is called Stray Dog. Just a real creepy, dark piece of music, kind of a cosmic gumbo, moves to the beat of jazz. yeah, just that constant driving rhythm, that pulsing bass line. And, you know, Iggy Pop's voice is so unmistakable at this point, just that low growl. He actually growls at points during the song like a dog.
Yep.
And it sounds very beautiful and it sounds very dangerous at the same time. And I think that perfectly sums up a collaboration between New Order and Iggy Pop really well. And yeah, it's just a really striking, unusual song that just kind of sucks you in there, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think this is like really good background music for me. Like, it's just like I could see like definitely, you know, driving around or, you know, playing some college football 25 or something with this going on in the background. What was interesting was as soon as I, like, I'm listening to it, and I'm like, this is giving me a vibe. And then I pinpointed it that it sounds like, it reminds me of the show Breaking Bad. They never used it, I don't think, but it feels like something they would do. And then just so happens, as I'm like researching the song a little bit before the show, turns out Steve Morris, the drummer of New Order, said he thought it reminded him of Breaking Bad. And I was like, hey, how about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I get vibes of like, you know, driving around at night and the car's going fast and maybe the cops are on your tail, or you're going to some place where there's a drug meet of some sort. You know, again, there's that danger element in there. And I think having Iggy sing it too, because given Iggy's history of being a dangerous guy at times on stage, I think it kind of helps having him specifically, not sing it, but just say it, say the song. So,
Yeah, next time I'm driving down to Fremont Street, I have to put this on and get into the mindset.
You know? All right, what's next for you there, Jeremy?
So the next song for me is from a movie soundtrack. The original band is Metric, the band that in the movie is The Clash of Demon Head. This is a vocal swap with an actress stepping in who, quite frankly, kills it. This is the song Black Sheep featuring Brie Larson by the band Metric. So yeah, the band Metric was sort of the inspiration that Edgar Wright used for what A Clash at Demon Head was going to be like and sound like in the movie Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. And so they needed a song for the big performance where you would meet that band, and they chose this song because Metric thought it was sort of... they didn't use this language, but for our listeners, they would understand this. This is like the pro wrestling version of the band Metric, where it's them, but everything's just turned up to 11. So it's a little more electric than they normally are. It's a little heavier than they normally are. And so they took that song, and then they actually recorded two different versions of this song, one that's in the movie itself, and then another that hit the soundtrack when it got re-released. And so... the soundtrack version, it's a little bit heavier than Metric's version, but then the film version is actually even more, like, it's specifically, they tried to make it sound more sinister because she is a heel in the movie, and so it's got an extended intro, and it's a little more, like, rumbly and a little darker feeling, but yeah, Brie Larson does such a great job on this. They had her vocals go, like, a little more sassy, a little more sultry than Emily Haynes, the normal front woman for Metric. And I feel like it just really works. Like, you would have thought, like, the first time that I saw the movie, I thought, oh, she lip-synced that, and that's someone else singing it, only to find out, nope, Brie Larson did that and did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Metric just in general. They're a fine, upstanding Canadian band.
Yep.
But if I didn't know who they were and you gave me the song and said, this is Metric, I would be like, okay, yeah, this is great. This singer's awesome. Cause yeah, she sounds awesome. Brie Larson is a really good singer. And she actually, before her, acting career really took off in a big way, she had a short-lived music career too. She has an album. It came out when she was 16. It's called Finally Out of PE. It's like a teenage pop rock kind of thing, and it bombed badly. And after that, she was like, let's stick to acting. But yeah, she's a really good singer. I think she just didn't want to really deal with the hassles of the music industry, which, fair enough. I mean, Hollywood's bad on its own. Acting and music at the same time can be a nightmare, really. But yeah, this movie is actually my introduction to Brie Larson. Because I saw this, and then a few years later, she was in 21 Jump Street. And then after that, she was in Short Term 12. And then she was in Room, and then Captain Marvel, and now she's, you know, a big star. So, yeah, a really good pick here, and one where it's not just another singer doing the lead vocals, it's an actor doing it. So, yeah, good stuff, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like the metric version of this song kind of feels like an indie band's version of this song, with, and I mean that in all of the good ways that it sounds like that. And then this song, this version sounds kind of like a label got their hands on them, which is actually like, that is what the band is in the movie. Like, so I feel like that was intentional and they really, really nailed it there. And it just shows you how, like, how one, how good Metric is that they were able to take this song that's theirs and make it work so well with her, and then also for her to just nail that vocal performance. It's pretty special.
All right, my next pick here is actually a cover. This was originally done by a band called The Click. No connection to wrestling, of course. this is REM. They did their own version of this song for their album Life's Rich Pageant. And Michael Stipe takes a back seat here. He does backing vocals. And the lead vocals are done by Mike Mills. So let's hear REM's version of Superman. You don't really love that guy you make it with now, do you? I know you don't love that guy, cause I can see right through you. I am Superman. I am Superman, and I can do anything. If you go a million miles away, I'll track you down. Trust me when I say I know the pathway to you. Yeah, just a delightful little tune there. It's hard not to bob your head around when it's going da 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 da. And yeah, Mike Mills takes the lead here. But it is funny, even when he's in the background vocals, you know, it's hard not to hear Michael Stipe's whiny voice. It keeps coming through no matter what. You can't help it. But I do think him and Mike Mills, they do harmonize really well together on this one. I'm not a huge REM fan, so I don't know how many other songs that Mike Mills sings lead on, but this one in particular is it's a fun little song, and I picked it for that reason. And Jeremy, that's my reasoning.
Yeah, it's a fun, silly little song. You know, it's hard to hate this. Like, it's just like, you know, perfectly cromulent little pop rock song to play sitting by the pool or what have you. Like, yeah, the song's great.
Yeah, this was the second single from the album. Fall on Me was the first, and I think that one did better than this one. But still, again, a fun little bop. And REM, you know, they're a band that I keep meaning to dive deeper into. I just keep holding it off for whatever reason. But anyway, Jeremy, what is next on the docket for us?
So this next song, soul rock classic that you probably are aware of, not you, but the listener is probably aware of from the movie Guardians of the Galaxy, where it got a huge new life. And that is Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop. I must have been through about This is just a soul rock classic. I need more soul songs with sick guitar solos in my life. Believe it or not, the song Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop is not sung by Elvin Bishop. Elvin Bishop is the one playing guitar on this song. The vocals come from Mickey Thomas of Jefferson Starship. He actually got the gig because of this song. They heard this song and were like, hey, that guy can sing. He should be in our band. And then he was. And then that happened and Starship happened and everything that happened after that because of his work here on Fooled Around and Fell in Love, which is just, in my opinion, an absolute classic soul rock song.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Elvin Bishop, a guy who was in Paul Butterfield Blues Band before he went solo. And he's got like a blues country vibe to him, of course. And this is one of those examples where he has this song and he decides that his voice wasn't right for it. He gives it to his background singer, Mickey Thomas, and it becomes his biggest hit, you know, his most well-known song. And, Mickey Thomas, of course, as you said, will go on to be in Jefferson Starship. Wrestling fans, AEW fans, you've heard his voice quite a lot over the years because he sings Jane. He sings Orange Cassidy's theme song. He also sings We Built This City on Rock and Roll. So, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, but... But yeah, just a really, really smooth voice to him. And you pair that with the musicianship as well. It makes for just a great combination for sure, Jeremy.
Oh yeah, the dueling guitar solos back and forth and like just everything about this is just, it feels very much of its time, but in a way that's also timeless. And it's why it works for a space movie about a tree that talks and a, you know, walking around raccoon and thing, like it works wherever you want to put it because it's just that good.
Mm-hmm. All right, my next pick, I am cheating a little bit because my next band is Gorillaz, and Gorillaz, they've got a lot of collaborators, so many over the years. Every other song has a guest singer pretty much, and this one features a guy named Pevin Everett from Chicago. This is off of the album Humans. This one is called Strobe Light.
Momentary pain can be pleasure lane. Millisecond change, magic lantern strains. Are we just too far to be as one again? Are we obsidian? Is this how it ends? Your life will turn just like a stroke, 'cause your daddy's vain and your mother won't, and your heart engages into heartless roles. Are we obsidian? Is this how it goes? When your Friday life is dreaming,
smooth as butter. Yeah. So, Damon Albarn from Blur. He's, of course, the main guy in Gorillaz. And like I said, he's worked with a ton of people in this band over the years as guests. And not all of them are super famous, as is the case here. I'm sure a lot fewer people have heard of the name Pevin Everett than have heard of Mos Def or De La Soul or Beck or Snoop Dogg or whatever. But that doesn't matter because he's still incredible. You know, he still has this amazing voice, as you just heard. And what's really cool is that, you know, for as big as Damon Albarn is, he's not opposed to working with, you know, guys like Pevin, who are your more under the radar working man singers. And what's also cool is that I've seen Gorillaz several times, and sometimes they bring the collaborators with them on tour. And I saw Pevin sing this one live. And later on, he sang on the song called Stylo. He did Bobby Womack's part, and he crushed it there too. So, I could have picked so many songs by Gorillaz. I'm a huge, huge fan of theirs, but I went with this one there, Jeremy.
Yeah, this is a great song, and his vocals on it are incredible. And yeah, I would imagine him being from Chicago, like, he's probably something of a name in, like, the Chicago house scene that I just am not hip to in any way, shape, or form. But just, yeah, an incredible job that he does on this track. A bit unfortunate recently, they just announced that he had a lung cancer diagnosis. And so there's actually a GoFundMe right now. If you just Google Pevin Everett GoFundMe, you'll find it. Listeners, you want to go chip a few bucks in. They're just trying to raise money for his lung cancer treatment, which, you know, hey, worthy cause, throw in $5 or what have you. But yeah, they do a really incredible job on this song. This is a great dance track. And honestly, I'm surprised, because I'm not a huge Gorillaz fan. Like, I feel like I should be a bigger Gorillaz fan than I am. But I haven't, it's not that I have listened to it and not liked it. I just haven't listened to too much of theirs. And this is a song that when I heard it, I was like, why have I never heard this song before? Like, I DJed in DC in the 2000s. Like, how did I not hear this? Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, they cover a lot of bases. They do a lot of dance stuff, a lot of rap stuff, rock, and, yep, and, you know, soul and Latin music. They really branch out in a lot of different ways, which is pretty cool because Damon, obviously, being in Blur, a bit narrower in the scope of the music. But with Gorillaz, yeah, he's able to really branch out and really stretch his stuff there for sure. But Jeremy, what do you got next for us?
All right, so my next song, probably most famous, from Tony Soprano, just driving around, singing it, belting it out. Who hasn't done the same? It's Dirty Work by Steely Dan.
Light the candle, put the lock upon the door. You have sent the maid home early, like a thousand times before. Light the castle in its corner, in a meeting. See terrible trouble, and I stay here just the same. I'm a fool to do your dirty work, oh yeah. I don't wanna do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's sax solo. I'm glad we got some of that in the clip here. Somehow this song is not in the movie Dirty Work that Norm Macdonald did. They didn't use it. They used Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap instead. I guess because the point of that movie was that they wanted to do dirty work. So I guess it doesn't really fit. So I guess that's on me. This is just a classic bop. It's like 70s pop, or, you know, whenever it was done. David Palmer, I guess, he's the singer on this one. He sang half the songs on the first album and then bounced. You have this song from Steely Dan with a singer that is not the normal singer from Steely Dan, and it's one of their classics, just a classic bop.
Yeah, David Palmer was in the band because Donald Fagen had stage fright, and he was worried about performing live. But only on the first album. After that, he's gone. But he still did Dirty Work. He still did this great deep cut on the album called Brooklyn Owes the Charmer Under Me, which I first heard in a gap, and I Shazammed it, and I was like, oh, Steely Dan, this is pretty cool. And then after that, he didn't really do much else. He did work with Carole King on a song called Jazz Man, which went to number 2, which is pretty nice, but after that, nothing really much. This is kind of his lasting legacy, but hey, listen, there are worse legacies to have than Dirty Work by Steely Dan, you know? Absolutely. So it's pretty good, I think, but... these were the days when Steely Dan was an actual, like, full band, and not just Walter Becker and Donald Fagen as a duo and a bunch of studio guys. Now, later on, what happens is Becker and Fagen did not want to tour. They just wanted to be a studio band. And the other guys disagreed, so they, you know, split off and left. And it became just a duo with the studio guys. So there you go. But, yeah, Steely Dan, I'm a big fan of theirs and their jazz rock goodness, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's weird. I was seeing, like, at the time, like, I don't think reception from music critics was great on this, because they were like, it's just pop music, whatever. But I feel like the fact that it has endured the way it has kind of borne out that, like, no, it's just a great song. Like, yeah, it may not be, like, extraordinary in any one way. It's just a good song, and sometimes that's enough. And it seems like history is borne out in this case that, yeah, it's just good.
Okay, my next pick is the Rolling Stones, another classic band here, and this is from their album Exile on Main Street, their famous double album with 18 songs on it, one of which is sung by Keith Richards. So let's hear this song called Happy. One of the better songs on the album, I think. There's a lot of fluff on Exile, but this is a great song. And it's the only Stone song that Keith sang lead that was also a hit single. Because he sang a bunch of songs over the years, but they were also never singles. And this went to number 22. And that's makes sense because Keith sounds really good on this. Like, people think Keith Richards, they think walking drug silo, you know, talking like Jack Sparrow. But the man can sing, you know. He's a triple threat, a guitarist, a singer, and a snorter. So, you know, Keith, good on him, man. He's still with us. And Happy's a good little tune there, Jeremy.
Yeah, it feels like with the Stones, they always had the, like, throw Keith a bone song. And then this is one of the ones that, like, actually, like, really took off. I don't know if you noticed it. I pick up a little bit in the beginning of this song. There's a little bit of Three Dog Night, Joy to the World in there. And it did come out a year prior. So I'm wondering if there was maybe a little bit of that, like, kind of snuck in while they were coming up with riffs for this or whatever. Because I get, like, a similar vibe going on.
Yeah, maybe it's like a Blackout Recall where Keith was just, you know, bombed out of his mind and it's on the radio and, you know, it comes to and like, oh, I've got an idea for the song here. And it just happens. It just happens. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay. What do you got next for us there, Jeremy?
All right. The Star Child, the Demon, the Spaceman, the Catman. They're known for very many things. Detroit Rock City, I Want to Rock All Night. But did you know that their biggest hit, number 7 on the Billboard Hot 100, is a little more subdued tune by the name of Beth. This is Kiss.
Playing, and we just can't find the sound. Just a few more hours, and I'll be right home to you. I think I hear them calling. Oh, Beth, what can I do? Beth, what can I do? I'm always somewhere else.
So Kiss, normal lead singer, of course, Paul Stanley, the star child. Here, Randy Newman steps in. Peter Criss, the Catman, the drummer, steps in. There's a lot of Randy Newman in here, although there's nothing in the song
about... There's more Rod Stewart, in my opinion.
Oh,
he's
interesting.
He's got kind of a raspy little voice there.
Yeah, I can
kind of
see that. Yeah.
The song Hard Luck Woman is very Rod Stewart-esque.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I can hear a little Randy in there, too.
It's just like when he strains and like in the very beginning, it's like I get real big Randy Newman vibes. Although there's nothing in the song's lyrics about how short people have no reason to live, so it couldn't be Randy Newman. But yeah, this is one where Peter Criss, the drummer, sings. He knows how to write a song. Or does he? Are you aware of the controversy behind this one, Andrew?
This song was written about a woman named Beck, originally, short for Becky. She was the wife of one of his bandmates in his old band.
Yes.
But they changed it to Beth. And there's a whole big hullabaloo of how much of the song did Peter write? How much of it did the other bandmate write? Was it a 50-50 split? Was it just... the bandmate, because I know, think like Paul was like, yeah, I read the lyrics, that's not Peter at all. Like, he could not write lyrics at all. You know, there's a big controversy, I guess. And that makes sense, because Peter Criss has gotten so much shit over the years from Paul and Gene. And there is, I think, a delicious irony that he's the guy who got them their biggest hit. He's the one singing on it. It went to number 7 on the charts. And it's a true crossover hit.
Yep.
That helps bring more women to the shows.
Yep.
And it's the goddamn Catman who does it. I mean, how great is that, really?
It's so fun. And I think Gene's refrain all these years has been like, well, if he can write these great songs, then why hasn't he done another one? Where Peter, he still maintains that it's him. And he's like, they're just jealous that I wrote our biggest hit. And, so yeah, it's kind of interesting as to who wrote this, but it is in fact Peter singing. The acoustic version of this from the MTV Unplugged also is incredible. And it's just, yeah, it's good, even though there are so many things about it that you could pick apart. Like, the vocal performance is not that strong. Like, why is Peter singing on this? Because he wrote it, I guess, and there's not really a drum part. Like, I don't really know why they went with him over Paul or anybody else, but it's just a good song. Like, and it makes a great appearance in the movie Role Models.
Yep.
Where you know, there's the one character is obsessed with the band Kiss, and as soon as you find out that Elizabeth Banks' character is named Beth, if you know Kiss, you're like, oh, I see where this is going. And sure enough, someone sings Paul Rudd sings a version of Beth to her, flanked by a bunch of LARPers. Great movie. Highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just a good song that is none of the things that you would ever picture when you think of the band Kiss.
It's such a radical departure, both musically and lyrically.
Yep.
You know, it's an orchestral piano ballad that is like a genuine, like, schmaltzy love song.
Yeah.
And not some sexual innuendo rock song. It's not Love Gun. It's not Deuce. It's not Rocket Ride. Like, you know, is it Bob Dylan at his finest? No, but, you know, you could play this for a girlfriend and she won't be creeped out by it or grossed out by it. So,
yep.
You know, it does marvel at the fact that, again, it's Kiss's biggest hit, and it doesn't sound anything like Kiss at all. It's amazing.
It really is. That I feel like that's an interesting list down the future, that I've just swiped a song from of, you know, big hits from bands that sound absolutely nothing like anything else the band does.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go to another band that has had its tumultuous history, shall we say. This is Guns N' Roses, and Guns N' Roses put out a pair of albums in 1991 called Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, and there are a lot of songs on those albums, and a few of them are sung by the rhythm guitarist Izzy Stradlin, and I picked one of those here. This is a song called Dust and Bones.
She loved him yesterday. He laid a sister. She said, okay, that's alright.
similar to Superman by REM, it is really hard to keep Axl Rose in the background of a song because he is such a force of nature. He can't help but just, you know, pound his way through there. But this is a really damn good song, I think. This got a bluesy swagger to this one. And I love the vocal harmony sandwich at times, where you've got Izzy's voice on top and then Axl's underneath. And then underneath that, this kind of like low, like growly kind of voice. And the Use Your Illusion albums, they were in some ways an attempt to diversify the band's sound. Because, you know, so often GNR go full throttle with a lot of their songs, especially with Appetite. But they did try to experiment a little bit and kind of go in a few different directions here with the Use Your Illusion stuff. And that included having Izzy sing a few songs, and they made a good choice there because Izzy is a damn good singer there. So yeah, I really enjoyed this one, Jeremy.
Yeah, and I felt like listening to this that his vocals are great. Like, why was it even an issue when Axl left the band? Like, why wasn't this just always Guns N' Roses? Like, I mean, I understand that, like, 80s, you wanted a frontman that was going to be a lunatic, but like, just musically, like, it works, and it works perfectly well. It kind of reminded me of that meme. I don't know if you've seen it. I keep seeing it on Instagram of, you know, it says like AC/DC, like starting a band, like, okay, so we'll call ourselves AC/DC. Now who should be the lead singer? And then it cuts to a guy that's like, I don't know, guys, it could be any one of us. It's like, that's what it kind of made me think of here. I was like, oh, this guy's got a better voice than Axl. Like, they could have just kept going. Like, they didn't need him, like, once he left. But I guess, I don't know, people thought that, you know, commercially that it was there. Musically, I feel like just let Izzy cook. This is good.
Yeah. I actually listened to both Use Your Illusion albums last year in full for the first time ever. And it's a heavy meal. It's a heavy meal. There's a lot of songs on there. It's 30 songs in total, I think. And they're not all going to be winners, but there are some real killer deep cuts on there, like Dust and Bones, that maybe don't get as much love as the big singles do. But yeah, if you have 4 or 5 hours to kill, you know, carve out that time to listen to the albums, because they're pretty good. I will say, though, do not listen to the last song on 2, My World, because it's bad. Okay, it's just a bad song. So you're better off just skipping that one. But Jeremy, what is your next pick?
So next up, we've got a band that is fronted by a very famous and iconic lead singer that also happens to have an absolutely incredible musician on drums who can write a song himself, and Dave Grohl is involved. And I'm not talking about Marigold by Nirvana. I'm talking about Cold Day in the Sun by the Foo Fighters. So this song comes from Foo Fighters' In Your Honor, which came out, I believe, in 2005. That puts me junior year of college. This was an incredible album and an incredible song on it. It's not like some, you know, showy, big, it's probably not many people's favorite Foo Fighters, or probably was not many people's favorite Foo Fighters song until the recent passing of Taylor Hawkins, the drummer for the Foo Fighters, who is on vocals and is the writer of this song. The song actually features him on vocals and Dave Grohl back on drums. Whenever they played it live, they would stay in place and Taylor would play drums and still sing, and then Dave would play acoustic. It's just like a laid back, feel good jam sesh. It kind of reminds me of Big Me from their self-titled debut, where it's just sort of, you know, just like, it's just, you picture dudes just sitting around on stools, like singing the song, like in the studio. And so it's just a real nice feel good song, which of course it has taken on so much more meaning now since Taylor's passing. It seems to be a song the fan base has rallied around to some degree. Like I noticed I saw way more people talking about this song after than before, as sort of, you know, and I believe they play it in memory to him. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's kind of kismet that you picked this, because I picked Have a Cigar earlier, and Foo Fighters did a cover of that with Taylor singing lead. So it's kind of funny how that works out there.
That is funny.
I, like everybody else, I miss Taylor so much. I saw Foo Fighters at Fenway back in 2018, and he is just, you know, he was a monster on the drums. And they did a cover of Under Pressure with Taylor on lead and Dave on drums.
Oh,
wow. So, yeah, it's one of those things where Taylor could step out from behind the drum kit and sing, and Dave could, you know, fill in, obviously, for him. They had that kind of versatility. And if you read Dave's autobiography, The Storyteller, which came out before Taylor died, you know, the love that he had for him was so evident. And they did the tribute concert at Wembley, the first of two, and they do times like these, and Dave gets so choked up singing it. It just hits you right in the gut.
Yeah.
So, a really nice song that kind of takes on a whole new meaning and a whole new weight after, you know, Taylor's death.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see here. My next pick is another ballad, and I figure let's add some more ladies to the episode here, and we'll do that with this band, Heart, which is, of course, Ann and Nancy Wilson. Ann is the singer. Nancy is the guitarist. And Nancy has, on a couple of occasions, sang lead on a few deep cuts here and there. But she does sing lead on a big, big hit. This is off of their 1985 self-titled album. And the song is These Dreams.
And the full moon that hangs over these dreams in the mist.
So that song, it was co-written by Bernie Taupin of Elton John fame and a guy named Martin Page, who wrote King of Wishful Thinking by Go West. And he also co-wrote We Built This City by Starship. Ah. There it is again. And it was originally offered to Stevie Nicks, who said no. And then Heart took it, and it was Nancy who sang it. And the reason that Nancy's vocals sound kind of gravelly there is because she had a cold. But she still sounds really good. And I think a funny story is, I think when the time came for Nancy to maybe, you know, sing another song, the record company wanted her to have that gravelly voice again. And I think the line was, can't you just get sick again, please? So, that's kind of the story behind that. But yeah, not one of their rockers, definitely on the lighter side of things for hard, but again, it's the 80s, and a lot of bands that were rockers in the 70s softened things up a little bit in the 80s to, you know, chase the hits. But a good song is a good song, and this is a good song there, Jeremy.
Yeah, the spray paint came out, and the teasing began, and the 80s were here. And yeah, no, I mean, I wrote two words for this in my notes as I was listening to the songs. This is pop perfection. Like, it's just, it's an earworm. It's a solid song. It's just killer. Yeah, it's very 80s. So if you're not into that, you're probably not going to love this. But yeah, it's so good. And like, the thing that I love is that her voice isn't perfect, because now that would never happen. Like, you would never release a song and have the singer's voice be a little gravelly, or, you know, it sounds like it's not exactly right on. It's going to be completely quantized and completely computer accurate to the pitch, like right as close as can be. And it's going to hammer out all the life that this has, which you need for a song about dreams. Come on.
Mm-hmm. And this was also Heart's first number one single on the Billboard 100, which it's amazing. I mean, Nancy Wilson, what a great voice. You know, Barracuda, Magic Man, Heartless, Never, so many good songs. And it's Nancy who does the deal,
yeah,
and gets their first number one. It's so funny in that sense. But yeah, watch the music video, because you hinted at this earlier, Jeremy, just huge hair on both of them. Just,
yes,
just 80s hair and wardrobe out the wazoo. It's incredible. All right, Jeremy, what is your next song?
All right. So I personally do not remember late December 1963, but Frankie Valli apparently did. Or did he? Someone did. They wrote a song. It's called December 1963, Oh What a Night, by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. So, yes, it is true. The most famous song that you probably know from Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons is not sung by Frankie Valli. This is sung by the drummer, Jerry Pulci. And this is just an absolute banger. If this comes on at a wedding, the dance floor is packed every single time. Trust me on this. If you're getting married out there, and you're trying to come up with, like, well, what song should we play? We don't have a DJ that we really trust. We need a good playlist. This song, boom, you're going to pack the dance floor. Guarantee it. This is coming from one of the best wedding DJs in the DMV. it's a classic. This is so good.
Yeah, it's amazing. I looked it up. This whole album, Who Loves You, from 1975, it really de-emphasizes Frankie Valli's vocals in favor of the other guys in the band, because Frankie had his solo albums at this point, and the label thought that it would help differentiate the solo albums from the Four Seasons albums by having the other guys sing more of the songs. And I think that's why on the album, the band is called the Four Seasons, not Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Which is kind of a funny thing there that, yeah, you know, everybody knows the Four Seasons and Frankie Valli and his, you know, very iconic voice, but one of their biggest songs does not have Frankie Valli in their singing lead. You can hear him later on, but yeah, Jerry Pulci, the drummer, stepping in to take over and nab a hit. So good for Jerry.
Yeah, if you're wondering out there, it's just the chorus is the only time you hear, you really hear Frankie Valli. He takes the lead on the, oh, ah, that is Frankie Valli. Pretty much everything else, not so much. And interestingly, this song, now it's on genius.com, so who knows if this is actually true, because I don't think they cite it, but apparently this song was originally supposed to be about Prohibition ending. And Frankie Valli was like, wait, what are we singing? No. And they rewrote the thing entirely, which this is probably a better song than whatever that would have been if that is the case. This one takes me back. Like, sometimes you'll hear a song and it puts you in a space. This, along with Centerfold by the Jay Giles Band, that they just take me immediately to the roller skate rink as a kid. Dating myself here a little bit. You know, you go out, Jay Giles Band is playing Centerfold, or this is playing, and everybody's out just, you know, doing circles on the rink floor. Right, you know, it's good times.
And there's young Andrew Rich on the side because he can't skate, and he always falls down, so he doesn't bother to skate. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Did you ever see the musical Jersey Boys?
I have not, no.
I went with my parents many years ago. And I'm not really a Four Seasons guy. I prefer Hilton, folks. but yeah, I saw it and I really liked it. And I was amazed at how many Four Seasons songs I knew and I also enjoyed at the same time. So, you know, score one for the Four Seasons, I guess. There you go. But okay. Well, my next pick, you played the Beatles earlier there, Jeremy. I have Paul McCartney's other band, Wings, and the core trio of Wings was Paul McCartney, Linda McCartney, and a guy named Denny Lane, and Denny sings a couple songs here and there. This one off of their album Venus and Mars, this is called Spirits of Ancient Egypt.
I'm your baby.
Kind of a spacey, ethereal sort of sound going on there. Denny Lane, before he was in Wings, he co-founded the Moody Blues. And he sang their first hit single, Go Now, and was only on the first album. And then after that, he left, and the band turned into, you know, the proper Moody Blues with the prog rock, art rock sound. But he does sing Go Now on the live album, Wings Over America, which is pretty cool. But yeah, you know, besides all that, when you're in a band with Paul McCartney, he takes up a lot of oxygen. Yeah. And rightly so, because it's Paul McCartney. But still, it's not Paul McCartney solo. It's Paul McCartney and Wings. It's an actual band. And Denny was an integral part of that. You know, he co-wrote on some songs. He sang on some songs. He was with the band from the beginning until the very end. So, yeah, he still got his moments to shine, as is the case here, Jeremy.
Yeah, I had never heard the song before. And so I'm listening to it, and it's like, it's such a, you know, it feels like an old school rock love song that you're like, okay. And then it hits that line where it's like, and when you finish doing that, I know what you'll want to do. Or when I finish doing that, I'll know where I want to be. And when it hits that, the music gets weird for a second in a way that you don't expect. And you're like, okay, that was kind of strange. But all right, back to the rock and love song. And then all of a sudden, the chorus comes out of nowhere, like a cult presentation.
Spirits just of ancient Egypt. Whoa.
It's like, what did I get roped into?
But that's very Beatles-esque. I mean, they had a lot of those songs in their later run that were like three or four songs like blended together. Band on the Run is three songs blended together, really. So yeah, it's par for the course with Paul for sure.
Yeah, it really, it's really interesting in a way that like it takes these like bold chances again in a way that a lot of music tends not to these days, where it's like, okay, like I think I know what's going on here. Wait, what? It's just this tonal disconnect that works so great in movies, and you see that so often in film, and people aren't really so quick to do that with pop music these days. But man, this is a weird little great little song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Denny Lane, he's died, but I actually got to talk to him on the radio a few years ago. Producing my dad's show at work, and Denny was a guest caller because he had a concert coming up, and I talked to him on the air, actually, and I kind of fanboyed about Wings for a little bit, so it was pretty cool, and awesome. He was a nice guy, so RIP Denny Lane.
Very cool. Great,
there you go. All right, Jeremy, what is your final pick for us today?
All right, my final pick here is a song that I really got into going through an 80s phase, and you may know it before Burger King was just releasing straight-up bangers for their commercials. They were using, music, just like everybody else, and this is a song that they use to great effect. This is Tempted by the band Squeeze.
I'm at the car park, the airport, the baggage carousel.
The people keep on grabbing,
me and wishing I was well.
I said it's no occasion,
it's no story I tell.
At my bedside, empty pocket.
Yeah, so this is one that, you know, around the time that everybody was listening to Running Up That Hill on repeat, like, you know, I had some playlists of some 80s stuff going on, and this seemed to make its way into, like, all of them. By the band Tempted, this is their keyboardist, Paul Carrick, on lead vocals for this one. And in the clip that you heard, there's also a little Elvis Costello snuck in there as well.
Mm-hmm. He produced it. Yep.
Yep. Who produced this track for them. And it's just a good 80s pop song.
Yeah. It's very, well, it's 80s, but it sounds like a 50s or 60s doo-wop song, you know, Blue Eyed Soul in a lot of ways, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Paul Carrick, you might not know the name, but you'll know the voice beyond this song. He was in a band called Ace, which has this song called How Long? How long has this been going on? He was also the co-lead singer for many years in Mike and the Mechanics. So if you know the song The Living Years, he sings that one too. And yeah, so he's had his fingers in a lot of pies. And he was the keyboardist in Squeeze for like, I don't know, a year or two at this point. And he sings one of their most famous songs. So again, a guy kind of brought in while the band's been going on for several years. He comes in and Elvis Costello is producing the album. He's like, you know what, Paul, you sing this one. And he does, and it's a hit. So, you know, when Elvis says something, you tend to listen, I think, there, Jeremy.
Exactly. Presley or Costello, you got to listen to both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Glenn Tilbrook, the normal lead singer, was like, yeah, I was annoyed initially at first, but it was a hit, so what can you do? So,
Pretty much, yeah. And I guess from like what I've seen, they always intended for Paul to stay with the band and probably even sing more songs. But he was like, I'm going to go do a solo thing. So he's just blowing through the music industry here and there, singing on songs all over the place and just making hits.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, my last pick here is by the band Faces. Not Small Faces, just Faces. And it's from their last album, Ooh La La. And normally, the guys singing in Faces are Rod Stewart or Ronnie Lane. But in this case, the guy singing is the guitar player, a fellow by the name of Ronnie Wood, who would later be in the Rolling Stones. So let's hear the title track from this album. This is Ooh La La.
I laughed at all his words. I thought he was a bitter man. He spoke of women's ways. They trap you and they use you before you even know. For love is blind and you're far too kind. Don't ever let it show. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish.
So this is a similar story to Have a Cigar, where both Rod Stewart and Ronnie Lane tried singing it. They couldn't make it work. And then the producer, Glyn Johns, was like, hey, Ronnie Wood, you try it. And boom, there's the song. And it's actually one of my favorite Faces songs ever. I discovered it watching the movie Rushmore, because it's played during the end credits. And that makes sense, because it does have that nostalgic, wistful feeling to it, and looking back on your life and so forth. But yeah, Faces, one of the great classic rock bands of the late 60s, early 70s, much more blues-focused and blues-oriented a lot of times. But when it came time to, you know, show off more of a folky, acoustic side of things, here's future Rolling Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood to lead the way. So yeah, that's my last pick, Jeremy.
Yeah, this song's incredible. And I think most people just assume this is Rod Stewart singing it. Because it kind of, you can, in the same way that you're like, well, Steven Tyler is singing Dream On, so surely this is Rod Stewart. You know, like you can expect a little bit of time to have aged the voice there. But now it's Ronnie Wood. And it's such a good song. It's interesting, too, because it's another one of those songs, kind of like I had mentioned with Master Plan, where it's like, you have this idea, because the chorus is so, like, it gets used in commercials all the time. I wish that I knew now what I, you know, when I was younger. And that's such an easy sentiment to hit home for people. But the verses are just like, these broads, am I right? And like, that's the thing that he wishes he knew when he was younger, was just, man, these women, they'll get you. And so that's just funny to me in that way, that, you know, sometimes a song can just sound a certain way and just be itself so iconic that it doesn't really even matter what it's actually about. And yeah, this song is a classic in every way that you could possibly define one.
Yeah, a good chorus and a nice melody can cover up a lot of the lyrical peculiarities, shall we say. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, what's the song that I'm thinking of? The pop song with the doot doot doots that's about crystal meth. Semi-Charmed Kind of Life.
Oh, yeah.
It's a total, like, that sort of thing happening here, where it's like, oh, yeah, the chorus, like, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I want something else from the Semi-Charmed Kind of Life. And you read the lyrics, and you're like, oh, this song's about, like, just doing hard, hard drugs and just wanting to get back to the hard drugs. Okay.
I mean, with a band that put out Jumper, what do you expect, really? So. Right.
Hey, I defend it. It's still, the music is fantastic.
It's pretty catchy. Listen, again, it's pretty catchy. You can cover up a lot of the peculiarities. Yeah, but all right, that was the episode there. Those were all of our songs. Jeremy, thank you so much for being here. This was just a lot of fun, man.
Thank you. This was an absolute blast. It didn't dawn on me until like just before we were about to record that I probably left like two or three songs off of this list that I'm kicking myself for, but there's so many. That's for the listeners to send in their picks and their choices.
Mm-hmm. Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
So right now, well, as of now, this week, we're having another meeting, myself and one Chris Samsa. And so all I will say is sportofprowrestling.com, watch that space. It's not going to be anytime soon, so don't expect a website in a week or two. It's going to be months, but wheels are in motion to turn that into something pretty special that we think people are really going to like. So sportofprowrestling.com, save the link now, follow the Twitter account, and stay up to date on when that launches.
Yeah, I need to give you your flowers because your match of the year poll websites you've done the past couple of years have been nothing short of outstanding. Just so easy to use, so intuitive, so sleek as well. Just fantastic stuff. And the same goes for the G1 Pick'em you did this year with Chris. Easily the best G1 Pick'em I've ever used.
Thank you.
Now, I haven't used a lot, mind you, but still, it's still the easiest I've ever used and still the best one I've ever used. So just great job on those fronts, man. Great stuff.
Thanks. Yeah. And I talked to Rich way back at the beginning of the year, but we'll be doing another, I'm sure, when we do the match of the year poll. I think we're going to get a little more in depth this year and have it try to calculate the results for us on the spot. So that we don't even really have to have any sort of delay between voting ending and the post going live for what the results were. So who knows? There could be all sorts of fun stuff coming at the beginning of next year, which is when I'd start to maybe start looking for some of these things.
The future has arrived, everybody. So cool. So cool. voicesofwrestling.com.
Yes.
All of the podcasts, articles, reviews, previews, and so forth on there. Twitter at Music of the Mat. Voicesofwrestling.com/Discord to leave a comment or leave your picks for this episode. And make sure you subscribe to it on Apple, Spotify, your player of choice, and leave a nice rating and review. Okay, let's go out with one more song here. In 1977, Timothy B. Schmidt replaces Randy Meisner in the Eagles. And he's still in the band to this day. And he only has lead vocals on a couple of songs, but one of them is an amazing song. This is off of The Long Run, and it's called I Can't Tell You Why. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.